Hello, you're listening to Just Screen It, Case Studies in Creative Distribution. I'm your host, Colin Stryker, and I am not an expert in indie film distribution. I am an independent filmmaker working towards making my first narrative feature, a horror film entitled The Grove. As I've been contemplating my own eventual distribution strategy, I've come to the conclusion that we need more data, more transparency, more information about how the various distribution options that are out there have worked for people. So I decided to start this podcast to help capture some of the experiences of those who have already been through it, whether successful or otherwise, and from those experiences, help both listeners and myself better understand this really complex, crazy landscape of independent film distribution today. So each week, I'll be bringing on a filmmaker who has self-distributed or been personally involved in the distribution of their film. My hope is that future filmmakers can take the knowledge gleaned from the show and use it to make their own decisions on how to best distribute their films. Hey, everybody. How are you? Alan C. Gardner has been making feature films since high school. Now in his early 40s and married with three kids to support, Alan is facing some decisions about how to make his lifelong obsession a bit more sustainable, but that's not stopping him from charging forward. He has so many feature films to his name, I couldn't keep track of them all in this interview. What strikes me about talking with Alan is how he keeps forging ahead, undeterred by market realities or really much of anything else. His even temperament, unfettered enthusiasm, and dogged determination to keep making movies in the face of changing circumstances seems to me like not only a model for success, but a well-earned reward in its own right. I can't wait to bring you this inspiring interview, my conversation with Alan C. Gardner. All right, I'm here with Alan. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, man. I'm doing really well. Thanks. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's good to see you.
Cool. You too.
Maybe just start off and kind of tell us a little bit about how you got into filmmaking. Give us a little bit of your background, your origin story, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll kind of move on to your distribution experiences from there.
Sounds good. I got into filmmaking at a very early age. I was saying the other day, it's hard for me to remember my life without loving movies. I remember Ghostbusters having a profound impact on me when I was four.
Wow.
That sounds about right. But I just always got so sucked into the movies I was watching. And it'd be a thing where it's like, I get so wrapped up in the world. It's like, oh, I want to make a movie. And also I want to do the job that the people in the movie do.
Right.
So like each movie I would see, it's like, oh, like, you know, Karate Kid. It's like, oh, I want to do karate, but also I really want to make movies. And then I started realizing like, oh, I just get really like wrapped up in what the characters do. I don't actually want to do those things. I just want to make movies about doing those things.
Right.
So anyway, I started writing, making little movies when I was really little, and then just kind of kept at it. I've always loved it. So that's how I got involved. I don't even remember it being a choice. The choices are just like continuing to do it, of course. But like, I always loved making movies. So yeah, it seemed like a no-brainer to always do it.
And yeah, cool. So I've watched one of your features, Cold Feet. Just watched that last night, enjoyed it.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
I know you've got a few others that you've done. So like, how did you get started? Did you start out like making a bunch of shorts and then kind of move on to features? Like, how did that go for you?
Honestly, we kind of went right into features like in high school. We did sketches and stuff too.
And when you say we, I'm sorry, like you've got a partner or something?
So, yeah, I guess. Well, so early on, so my buddy Brad, who actually I co-directed Cold Feet with, and he was a producing partner on it too. Like he and I met when we were 14, been quickly clicked as like, you know, movie geeks. And we just started writing together. It was kind of like he and I would work on the story together and then I would write the script. Yeah. So we just kind of like, we continue to like, I solo direct and then sometimes I co-direct with Brad too. Mm-hmm. So that's been a very fruitful, like long running collaboration that I'm super grateful for. But yeah, so we just kind of started like, you know, that was the medium that we watched was feature length film. So that's what we were drawn towards. So we had like a few false starts, you know, like we started making a few that we didn't get past like, you know, a couple days of shooting or whatnot. But then when we were 17, we made our first official feature film, unsanctioned, but official in terms of like, it was a remake of Halloween.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. No distribution prospects for that then.
Oh, no. This was just like, just we were going to make a movie and it wound up being like a remake of Halloween.
Yeah,
this is back in high school. So it was like, we just had a blast doing it. So that was kind of like our first feature, like with an asterisk, because yeah, we can only do so much with it, but we learned a lot from it. So yeah, so I haven't really done a lot of shorts, but I've done some sketches and stuff, but yeah, mostly features. Yeah.
So what was your first feature that was sort of like, you know, kind of getting more serious about actually getting it out there and maybe making some money off of it or anything like that. Like, take us through that.
Yeah. So we made a few. There was the Halloween remake, and then we did like Day of Reckoning, Fallout, Hustle. I'm just kind of going through my mains to an end, Hustle 2. And then I think the first, and then I made, there's a couple that I did called 2000 Miles and Lost and Found. Those weren't really like heavily distributed though, but those were kind of like more moving more in a, you know, quote unquote, serious direction. Those were like my first like really personal films. The films were like, oh, I kind of know what I'm talking about here.
Then
the one where we kind of like started getting out there more was right on the heels of those. It was called Act One. And that one we actually made, I mean, that one we shot, 19 years ago now. We recently distributed it on like a few, like on, it's on DVD in some spot.
Wow.
We had like, we got a distributor for it. And you know, we were just excited, like, oh, they're still making, you know, DVDs of some movies right now, which, you know, I have a lot of fondness for DVDs. So that's kind of fun. And then like on Vimeo On Demand and like Amazon and a few sites. But anyway, so that was kind of like our turning point movie.
Right.
It wasn't widely distributed at all, but we did some festivals with it, and we really kind of found our footing a lot more with that one.
Yeah. So kind of, I'm just curious, like going back a little bit before that, then it sounds like you made a few features anyway that were, you know, maybe not, you know, quite quote unquote serious or as serious, or, you know, were just for fun or that kind of thing. And, you know, not to diminish the value of making features for fun. But
Totally,
you know, I'm just kind of curious about your mindset about that, because I do think some filmmakers, like, you know, when they go set about making a feature, they have this grand vision of like getting their feature out there and getting it into big film festivals, getting it picked up by some something like that. And I don't know how many filmmakers actually like go about making their first feature kind of not being at least somewhat serious about that or thinking about that. And so I'm just kind of like curious about what your mindset making those early features was, and what were you sort of hoping to accomplish with them?
I guess in retrospect, like we did at the time, we were like very serious about them. It's just that I'm kind of like looking at things in hindsight right now.
Yeah, so
kind of like,
yeah.
You know, knowing what I know now, whatnot. Like we approached them like, I still remember like we made this movie called, it was Halloween 1998 and then Day of Reckoning and then Fallout. We made in pretty rapid succession. Fallout we made right after we graduated high school. So we made Fallout and I had that movie and I was like, all right, we got it. We got Fallout. This is like my ticket or whatever. And I moved out to Los Angeles and I've lived out here ever since. But I had Fallout in my back pocket and I was like interning for this casting director. I'm like, well, check this out.
Right.
And she was very nice. And I think she watched it, but let's just say that Fallout was kind of dead end, might have been a more appropriate title. But no, but we would learn so much from it though. And it's, you know, it's all like, so we were very serious in our approach with it. And all we, like, what it really comes down to is like, all we knew is that like, we love making movies and we were going to keep doing that. So we just had so much fun doing it. So of course, there were kind of like residual ambitions, if you will, that, you know, would stem from that pure, like just love of doing the thing because we just felt compelled to do it. And yeah, we thought that like, maybe like, you know, certain films would like Fallout, for instance, would like kind of maybe open certain doors as well. But that was all kind of like a byproduct. The point was to make it. And the point was to kind of like band together as a team to make it. And then I just always knew that I wanted to, you know, keep pursuing like, and then I would always write, act, and then start directing as well and producing and editing. Like I just knew I was always make movies in some capacity for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So yeah, Fallout and all those earlier films were steps along that path that
sure.
I continue to be on.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So what was the, I forget, you said you had like, and by the way, I didn't mean to like kind of diminish your level of seriousness about those early films.
No.
You know, it's hard to, because we all make films for different reasons and in different ways and, you know, with different levels of expectations. So it's kind of hard to find the right language to describe anybody's mindset. So I think you mentioned after Fallout, there was another film then that you made that I think you called a little bit more serious or something. I don't, you know, again, I don't know what's
totally. No, you're absolutely right. I was partially
like, I'm guessing these early films, I'm guessing these early films, yeah. You were just kind of paying for them out of pocket. You weren't trying to raise financing for them or anything like that.
Totally.
It was just right.
And we all out of pocket, like the first one where we went out and like tried to like raise, and we went up raising a little bit of financing, but it was still mostly out of pocket for Act One. And we got some financing for that, but that was like super, super ultra low budget too.
Okay. Right.
But that was the first one we got any kind of like outside. Well, actually Lost and Found, we got a little outside financing. So it was around that time, like Lost and Found and Act One were back to back. And we started getting some outside financing from there. But honestly, like for the most part, like we have had outside financing over the years, but a lot of it has still been out of pocket. Even like over the most, like Cold Feet, for instance, which you just watched, that one, I, you know, I went deeply into debt making that movie.
Did you? Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah.
That
recently
story,
got out.
Right.
Recently got out of that debt.
So that was that your most recent one? Did I get that right? I kind of went through the ones that you sent me and looked at the dates, and I kind of wanted to watch the most recent one just to kind of get an idea of like what your most recent work is.
Totally, yeah.
And so, yeah, I couldn't
that
find
that was the most recent one we finished.
Okay,
that was the
gotcha.
Most recent one that we have finished. And we're currently like round almost done with post on a newer one, but that's the most recent one that's been released. Yes,
got it. Okay, all right. So again, kind of going back in time a little bit to kind of your first more ambitious ones. Did you get to a point where you kind of wanted to take distribution more seriously and, you know, sort of like really kind of try to go after maybe a somewhat higher budget kind of effort and try to make that money back through some kind of distribution deal or anything like that? Like, did that enter your mind at some point, and did you kind of pursue that more seriously at some point? Again, I'm using that word serious, and it's a hard word to, you know, pin down.
No.
You know what I mean, though, right?
Yeah, for sure. I would say that, like, okay, so after Act One, we made a movie called Daylight Fades that was, because honestly, a lot of things we were still, you know, this was, I mean, Act One, when we put it out there, this was 18 years ago.
Yeah.
So, the landscape was pretty different back then.
Yeah, for sure.
But we were starting to, like, learn more about, you know, film festivals and distributors and different ways of getting a movie out there. And so after Act One, we made one, which is still our biggest budget production to date. We made a movie called Daylight Fades. And that's the one we got the most by far outside investors on board for that. That was our longest shoot. That was our biggest crew. That was, it's the big, you know, in terms of scale, that was the biggest on all fronts. And so with that one, we did pursue a bit more aggressively, like some worldwide distribution. And we had an executive producer on that, my buddy Ryan Watt, who kind of spearheaded a lot of the distributor hunt. And that one was probably still overall the one that's gotten out there the most, because we did sign. Yeah, we got pretty like worldwide. I don't remember how many territories, but we were in a lot of territories with that one. I feel like it's, yeah. Anyway, not to get ahead of myself, but like either that one or one I did soon after called Being Awesome that have gotten out there the most. But Daylight Fades was kind of like, in terms of distribution, that was kind of the turning point there.
Yeah.
Like Act One was kind of like the, like, okay, like we kind of like, like I said, I'm writing more personally now. I know more about what I'm talking about. I'm finding my voice more. We're finding our approach more. And, you know, we're feeling like, oh, the work is getting more on the level that, you know, we want it to, you know, it's more like there's less of a deficit between what we wanted the movie to be mm-hmm. and what the movie actually is. Like that deficit kind of kept closing with each subsequent production. And Act One was the first one, like, oh, the deficit's pretty small now. Anyway, and then from there, and then Daylight Fades was, yeah, where we got more serious about distribution.
Yeah, okay. I love that way of looking at it, too, like the deficit between what you kind of expect the movie to be or want the movie to be and what you can actually accomplish with the resources you have. And, you know, it's a great way to kind of look at things. And I think it's, you know, that's a great way to look at a filmmaking career in general, is like always trying to close that deficit. I mean, there's all, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that filmmakers are always trying to do. But one of the things is to try to get to a point, both, I think, maybe sort of financially, but also creatively, where you are kind of coming up to your expectations rather than falling short.
Totally. Yeah.
So the life can be a lifelong pursuit to try to get to that. And it sounds like you've made a lot of films. So it sounds like you are, like, nothing stopping you. You just kind of keep going full bore ahead. Yeah. Like how many features have you now kind of produced and or directed at this point?
So on the writing and producing side, it's 16 now, including Halloween 1998 and like all those earlier ones too, which I don't, you know, I'm very fond of those movies. Like those are, you know, well, a lot of the ones that maybe we wouldn't show as, you know, as often to people now or whatnot, or they're out there as much, but technically it's 16. We're about to finish up. Wait, yeah, Baby Come Home is the 16th. I guess 17 now, but then 17. And then as a director, I've directed or co-directed 8.
Yeah.
Them.
Okay. That's, yeah. I mean, that's I think quite an accomplishment. You seem like, if I can ask how old you are, I'm guessing 30s.
Sure, I'm 42.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, you know, that's, I've made one documentary feature and I'm looking to make my first narrative feature and I'm 54. So, you know, different trajectory there, but yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, movies cost money. And so I'm kind of curious, like, at what point are you thinking, like, I need to, you know, I need to either invest my own money and be, you know, pretty sure of making that money back on the movie, or I need to get outside investments so I don't have to worry so much about You know, is that as you go along, is that something that is sort of crossing your mind and having to deal with, is like, where is the financing coming from for these movies? Because, you know, movies are not cheap, that it costs a lot of money to make them. And so I can't imagine that you keep making all of these movies, not being at all concerned about how to kind of, you know, get, you know, some compensation or return on making them, you know. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong on assuming that, you know, but
no,
what you're thinking as you're going along in terms of like financing these movies.
So the biggest thing that changed for me in terms of my thinking about all that, so when I made Cold Feet, I was single, and now I'm married and have three kids. My life has changed dramatically since then. Like back then, I would like, that's why I was like, I would just take out all the credit cards in the world, my savings, whatever, because that was what I felt was my obligation back then. And my responsibility was like to my friend, to my, like to our team. And I wanted to like make these movies and get these movies out there. So I had no, like, that's what I spent my money on. And that's what I also spent money I didn't have on. But then right after Cold Feet, I fell in love, like right after. And so, and then we just kind of like, you know, we were off and running. So obviously from there, like, you know, things shift. So like right when I fell in love, I had like that mountain of debt from Cold Feet. Yeah. So I just kind of gradually just worked my way, you know, chipped away at that over the subsequent years. Anyway, so the last movie that we made was called Baby Come Home. And that's the one we're finishing up post on now. And that's one that we made for like super low budget. Cause I went back to like, okay, I want to go back to a model of like, let's be, you know, you're always trying to be extremely resourceful, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I got to make this like very, very low overhead and make this in a very, you know, compact schedule. So I designed the whole thing. It's like four characters, one location. Designed the whole thing to be able to be shot like on like an ultra, you know, incredibly low budget, kind of going back to almost like even like, you know, high school era or like right after high school era, like budgets like that low.
Yeah.
Because obviously my priorities have completely shifted. So now like moving forward, it's about, okay, I have like different projects right now where, you know, for instance, like Brad and I'm writing one right now for Brad and I to direct. And that one, you know, we kind of have like a fixed budget in mind, very low budget. And we're either going to, you know, do that self-financing together or get some sort of like outside financing. But we have to keep it very much more, you know, much more contained now, just because I can't, you know, right now I can't, I just got out of all that debt and I can't bury myself in so much more.
Did Falling in Love did end up in kids as well?
Yeah, so I was like, three kids.
Oh, yeah. I think you did say that. Right. Okay.
Yeah. No, all good. And that's the biggest thing. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like, talk about, you know, priorities changing. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. Now I've got to make sure that, you know, providing for these guys.
And are you, as you're going along making these films, are you working day jobs as well? Like, how are you supporting yourself, if I can ask?
Sure. So right now I write commercial treatments. And then I do some post coordinating for reality shows. That's on hiatus right now. I think it's going to start back soon. But right now I'm doing the commercial treatments. So I do those. So basically all that work, though, for the most part, I work from home, which is great.
Nice.
Which is very, it very definitely suits our life. But yeah, so now it's kind of like I have these different projects where I've got one that I recently wrote. I'm about to rewrite that I'm going to try to take to market, if you will. I've never really like taken one out there to try to get an agent or a manager with. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, now it's time, you know, again, for a variety of reasons, namely my kids. And then like, also I'm like, I would love to like take a script out there into the world and also try to like open up more doors for our productions as well and create more possibilities and you know, find more resources and whatnot and create more alliances. So I've got that script I'm going to go down that path with. I've got the one I'm running for a very, very low budget for Brad Knight's direct. I'm going to go down that path with. Mm-hmm. And then I have another one that I just wrote that I'm going to do as a play initially and try to get interest stirred up from the play and then do the movie soon after.
Cool.
So I've kind of got those look kind of my main. And then there's Baby Come Home, which we're about to finish up post on. And then, you know, I'm just going to get that out into the world the best. Like, we did that one super, super low budget. And everyone basically worked for back end on that. And so try to get that out into the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, as best we can. So I've kind of got those four. And then I've got some other ones that I've got.
Right. Keeping yourself busy.
Different approaches with each of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have like sort of cast and crew that you work with that are sort of friends that you're able to work with and kind of keep the labor costs like way down so that you can make these, you know, I know like with Cold Feet, it was all one location, but it was, you know, it did have a sizable cast of, I don't know, seven or eight, something like that, you know, and that if you're paying them like full day rates, that certainly adds up. So I'm kind of curious about how you're kind of going about that.
You know, the funny thing, well, one of the fun things with Cold Feet was that, like, the initial idea for that was like, all right, I'm going to write, like, you know, again, like one location and like do an ultra low budget. And the budget wound up being about 3 or 4 times more than like I originally, just from initial conception, thought it would be. One thing is because we were it's like you get down to it because there's 8 of us in the main cast, but then there's also like a lot of supporting players. We flew a lot of people out there.
Wow.
Because we shot in Memphis, which is where I'm from, which is where Brad lives. And so there's a lot of benefits of shooting in Memphis, including cost cutting benefits. But still, like when you're transporting that many people and then just, you know, accommodations, like, you know, we've had, you know, people staying at different places, but like all that adds up quickly. And we did still have a pretty sizable crew on that one. That was like our, you know, Daylight Fades was the biggest crew, but that the Daylight Fades budget, I'll just go ahead. I mean, the Daylight Fades budget was about 200 grand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Cold Feet budget was like in the more like, it wound up being closer to like 75. But so Daylight Fades had our biggest crew, but Cold Feet was like right behind it. And part of that is because Daylight Fades, we wound up shooting for with additional photography that wound up being 43 days. And Cold Feet, we were able to get Cold Feet done in 16 days.
Right. Okay.
Which is pretty breakneck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that helped a lot, is having the schedule be a third of that. So anyway, but the budget on that one ballooned up. So like this next one, like I have to keep more, things just kind of kept adding up. But again, back then I was like, it's okay. Like I'll make it work. And so, you know, I did ultimately, but it was really a struggle. Yeah. Paying for a lot of that. And then, so now, yeah, I just have to kind of like, so now with this one too, the one I'm writing for Brad and I to do right now, part of the design of that one is a smaller cast, like a much, much smaller cast.
Right.
Because again, like the more people, you know, obviously the more, but that's what I wanted to do with that one. I wanted to write roles for all of us and to create this project for like all of us to do together. So anyway.
Yeah. So Cold Feet, you know, appreciate you sharing kind of the budget numbers, you know, $75,000. Were you ever able to kind of make a substantial portion of that back? Or was that just money out of your pocket that just went into the movie and that's that? Like, you know, what was the, where did that actually end up? And how did you do in kind of terms of recouping that cost at all?
So Clinton and I were talking about this recently too. It's kind of like, we have not recouped a lot of it back now. A lot of it's kind of like money out the door. But the thing about the way these movies, you know, the release of these movies now is that the movie's out there and it will continue to be out there, like hopefully indefinitely. So you never can tell.
Yeah.
And we get these quarterly payments and you never can tell. Some quarters are much better than others. You just don't know. And who knows, like if something happened, like if another one of these new ones I'm working on gets noticed more, then sometimes like the past work gets a bump as well. We've seen that happen. So at this point it's kind of like Clinton and I were basically talking about, like, you know, basically all that money is out the door. There's money we're going to spend. And it's like, we need to make movies. So we made the movie, we spent the money. And now it's kind of like any money that comes in, it's kind of like, ooh, bonus.
Yeah.
We're basically not like currently, at least counting on with these projects, counting on enough money to come in to have, you know, to recoup our full budget or to make a profit. Now, that being said, like, I would love to, like, again, especially with my 3 kids, and then also like when, you know, continuing to make movies, like I'm trying to create models now that are more sustainable where I can make more of a profit moving forward, which is part of the design of Baby Come Home, which is part of the design of the thriller script I'm writing right now. And then, you know, the other projects too, trying to make it more a sustainable thing where it's not just like the money that comes in is like, ooh, bonus. It's more, I have to make them profitable to keep. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so what kinds of things are you thinking about? You know, we talked about kind of keeping the budgets down, but, you know, even a really low budget in this environment these days can be tough to recoup. So what kinds of things are you thinking about in terms of being able to, and then, you know, if I can ask, you know, kind of before answering that question, like what, if you're coming down from like a 75K budget for Cold Feet, like what are you thinking in terms of budget levels now for, you know, the one that you're just finishing? I'm sorry, I don't remember the title off the top of my head.
That's okay.
And like future projects, just because you've made so many, they're like.
Yeah, no. So the one we just finished is called Baby Come Home.
Baby Come Home, right.
Yeah. And that one, you know, basically almost everyone worked for back end on that. And it was a 4-day shoot.
Oh, wow. For a feature.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That is, yeah. I mean, you said 16 was breakneck, but 4 is like.
16 was breakneck, especially with all those elements in place. But like this, 4 days, definitely even more so.
Wow.
But that one again was like designed. So it's like, oh, be able to do it in that amount of time with 4 cast members. And so it's kind of like, I basically came up with a concept for that one that fit that model. And it was things that I had in my mind a lot back then. And it's thing, you know, basically any script that I write, it's kind of a confluence of a variety of things. I mean, first and foremost, like what do I have to say right now? Like, what do I want to explore? Is there a genre that I want to explore? Is there, you know, what am I trying to do with this project? And like, what's, you know, because they all have to be personal to me in one way or another. Like they all have to really mean something to me and be indicative of like who I am and what I have to say in some capacity. And also I have to really like be excited. Like, of course, like, I have to be really excited about them. So yeah, it's kind of like I come up with an idea that fits whatever it is that I'm looking to pursue. I come up with an idea that fits that and that like kind of clicks on all cylinders for me. So yeah, so part of it is like we asked about reducing budget. Part of it is that creating stories that I can, that would feed into that, that would be, that are manageable on a budget, you know, in terms of makeability.
Yeah.
For lack of an actual word.
Right. No, it's a good word. We'll make it a word.
Makeability. We'll
it's a makeable word. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's a big part of it. And then outside of that, I mean, that's kind of like a huge part of it really. And then outside of that, it's just trying to find different ways to, again, like with the script that I'm going to get out there and hopefully sell, get option, find a rep with something, you know, and want some capacity like that. I mean, that's obviously a different model because that's just, you know, whatever money comes in, you know, I'm not going to produce that one myself unless like, yeah, well, either way, I'm not going to produce it myself unless we get some sort of deal where it's like they want us to, you know, me and Brad to like direct it as well. But I'm planning on just kind of like selling that one and getting it out there. So there's that approach with that one. And again, with the play, it's kind of like we want to generate, we're doing a podcast for the play as well, like releasing that and trying to get basically stir up interest in the play. And then with the play, stir up interest in the movie, whether, you know, interest through the audience members, of course, like attracting like a fan base to it. And that one's very music fueled too. So we're going to make, we're going to record several songs for that one as well. So we'll be able to get that out there in that capacity. So that's a different branch as well that we're going to explore that we've never really explored before.
Right.
Is a movie that's kind of like, you know, there's a lot of like original music to it. And so trying to like, so on those fronts, like podcast, doing the play, having music out there, and then shooting the movie. So by the time we shoot the movie or by the time we're prepping the movie, hopefully all these other things will help generate the money that we need to make the movie. And then also when the movie gets out there, we'll already have at least some sort of fan base or awareness in place from podcast, play, and album.
Right.
So by the time the movie gets out there. So that's another approach with that one. Yeah, again, with Baby Come Home, that was just like, yeah, like I said, like writing it, we can make it like super, super, super low budget, like the lowest budget I've done in like 20 years. And then with the one with Brad, same kind of thing, trying to, that'll be a slightly bigger budget, but I'm trying to keep that one to like 10 to 15,000, hopefully 10. And so kind of just designing the whole thing to be able to be, again, the makeability, to be able to make it within those parameters. A lot of it's like established, like what are the parameters here too? Like what's our sandbox? Like what's, and then in designing it with it, coloring in those lines, basically. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's a great way to think about things. Like, you know, obviously you want to make something personal and you're, whatever personal means can go in a lot of different directions. It can go in some very expensive directions. You know, it can also go in some very inexpensive directions. And so kind of pursuing those inexpensive directions as the ones, you know, to kind of pursue further seems like a realistic choice. And then, you know, when you're talking about budgets like $10,000, those are recoupable in today's market. You know, I think the like $200,000, $300,000 budgets are pretty tough, you know, without name talent and those kinds of things, you know. So filmmakers that are hitting up that level of budget, and I unfortunately include myself in that category, but you know, that's where I'm at. But you know, that their prospects for kind of recouping those investments are pretty bleak, I think, in today's environments. But if you can keep to those like ultra micro budget things like $10,000,
you
stand a reasonable chance of like putting it out on Film Hub and doing a little bit of promotion. And actually, you know, if it takes off a little bit, you can make that money back and that can become a sustainable thing.
And that's what we're looking to. And the only, the caveat too with that one is that the only reason I think the budget would go at least much higher than that is if we wind up attaching some sort of name talent.
Right.
But basically, but we're not necessarily counting on that. We're not planning on that. But if that were to happen, like maybe we'll pursue that for a bit.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I do have someone in mind, but like, it's not that I think, you know, we would make it with or without name talent attached. It's just the budget would shift based on whether or not we have name talent attached. Because that is something I learned from Daily Fades too, is that, that's a really like $200,000, but without like name talent attached is a really awkward place to be in because it's just kind of like in this mid area of like, it's, you know, you can get the movie out there, but it's really hard to recoup that without, someone's name on the poster or whatnot.
Right. Like if you're up into like the $1 million, the $2 million territory, then you're not making these like little kind of, you know, gritty, low budget, you know, personally driven indie films. You're kind of, unless you're super wealthy, you've got some kind of interest being able to make that. And that interest is going to translate presumably into promotionability, making up another word, marketability, those kinds of things.
I like it.
But there's kind of, there's that lower six figure budget where you're kind of in the in-between zone between those projects that have a certain business value attached to them and these like ultra personal films that maybe don't have that much business value attached to them, or, you know, or the business model is completely different and it's geared towards that like really low budget kind of recoupment. But that middle zone is really awkward, just as you say.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like I said, that's the zone I'm in. I'm not trying to make
you're in that zone.
So okay, I talk about this all the time. I say that like it's awkward and yet I'm like right in the middle of it, and that's the film I want to make, you know. So
I'm embracing a narrative film.
Yeah, it's a narrative horror film, you know. And that's, you know, horror films do have that kind of somewhat better chance of like doing better without name talent, you know, than other film, other genres. So, you know, hopefully that has that going for it. But, you know, it's sort of a once in a lifetime thing for me. And I sort of have this plan that if it doesn't work out, then I'm going to kind of, from then on with my filmmaking, I'm going to reduce things back down to the $10,000 level and just try to sustain that for, you know, as long as I can live and breathe. But I have this kind of one chance to make a higher budget film before I get too old to do it. And I'm just going to do it. You know, that's my mindset anyway.
So. No, that's cool. And I think that's great. Like for me too, just to be like, it's like, I would never say like, oh, this, if you go down this path, it's going to fail or like whatever.
Right.
Like,
right. There's, you know, all kinds of different paths. Yeah.
You do what you got to do. Like for me, it's like, oh, I know the paths that I've already gone down and I know what I want to continue. I know my circumstances. I know what I want to continue doing.
Right.
So for me, it's kind of like, yeah, like I want to, you know, I want to make ones that have some name talent attached that have more like the $1-2+ million budgets going and like pursuing those while also still doing like my ultra low budget, gritty, like more like 10-20,000. So I've even learned too, like that for me, like the $75,000 model isn't sustainable for me right now either.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got to be more like, it's kind of got to be like 20-25 grand or less, or yeah, more like $1 million+ for me right now. But I'm excited to hear about your project too. I don't know how much you want to talk about your project.
You can, every episode of the podcast, I end by kind of promoting my website, darkrosepictures.com, and you can read about it there. You know, I can talk about it as much as you want. I'm here to interview you, but you know, I'm always happy to talk about my project. It's just, without getting too much into the weeds of it, I'm older, in my 50s, and have been kind of working. I made a documentary feature back in the 2000s, and then kind of like you, I got married, I had a kid, and kind of my responsibilities shifted. And you know, throughout the period of raising my kid, who's now 11, I was sort of focused on making a narrative feature, a horror feature. For various reasons, the one that I wanted to make, I couldn't get done, but I shifted a few years ago to making a different one. And I'm sort of going full bore ahead with that. And, you know, my life circumstances have aligned in a way. I have a little bit of money. I'm you know, a little bit more comfortable and can take a chance on, you know, doing something like this. So I'm just doing it, you know. I already made 3 shorts this past summer. I'm in post-production on those. They're sort of like preparation for the feature, kind of practice and promotional tools and that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm just sort of diving into making this feature. You know, like I don't have the starry-eyed dreams of people in their 20s of like making it big in Hollywood or anything like that. I just want to make a narrative feature that has, you know, something of a respectable budget. I shouldn't say use the word respectable, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
You know, I can pay cast and crew a kind of a reasonable day rate and things like that.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of production value and things like that. You know, I just want to make a film like that once before I die. You know, and if I never get a chance to make it again and have to go back down to, you know, a real micro budget level, I'm okay with that. But, you know, I have the opportunity and I don't want to pass it by. So that's kind of my thinking. That's where I'm at. Yeah. We all have to kind of chart our own course. And I think, you know, all of the people that I talk to on this podcast, every story is different. Every path is different. Every, you know, set of ambitions is different. And so it's just really interesting to hear all of those stories, yours included. So, yeah.
Cool.
So that's me.
That's great, man. So nice. Thanks. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, you know, kind of back to your movies, like, do you use Film Hub to put them out there? Like what do you do to actually get them out there and try to get people to watch them?
I mean, I should explore Film Hub more. So far, like what I've done, a lot of what I've done is writing out lists of basically get distributors and their contacts, and just a lot of like cold emails to distributors. And I've also, you know, the film festival route, you know, which I have a variety of feelings about, you know, basically trying to find the ideal festivals for each project. and submitting to as many of those as possible. You know, we've all, you know, getting a plan in place for those. And then from there, usually, like, once we have, like, some festivals going on, either ones that we can invite distributors to the screenings, or usually they'll just want us to send them a link. But it's good to, like, have something, oh, we're going to play at this festival. Like, you want to come check it out? And whether or not they take you up on it, at least they'll, like, give you something to write about, something to contact them about. And then it might make them more inclined to want to check out the link. We've gone through different avenues, like, I mean, festivals and then just the cold emails. We've also had a couple of sales reps over the years. You know, we've done a couple publicists for one of our play that we did a while back. We hired a publicist from our movie Being Awesome, was playing a dance of the films out here. And we hired a publicist for that. So we've tried, like, you know, different, and there's a lot of course, like, you know, social media engagement, which is really hard, you know, to do a ton of that.
Certainly is.
As I'm sure, as I know Clinton discussed too, and Clinton and I talk about a lot. So basically trying all of those things. We've had, you know, some lovely, like, interns, like, do some wonderful work helping get our stuff out there on social media more. Just trying different things, man.
Yeah. So what's worked for you? You know, tell us some stories. Like, what's worked for you? What hasn't worked for you in all of those things that you've tried?
Let's see. I feel like, I mean, honestly, like, some of those cold emails worked out pretty well.
So have some of your films actually gotten picked up by distributors and kind of distributed that way?
Yeah. So Cold Feet, which you watched, like, Cold Feet and Bad Bad Men had the same distributor.
Okay.
And Bad Bad Men played at Dance of the Films. And that's when I met Clinton, was that year. He had a short playing there. And so we saw each other's work.
Just so listeners know who we're talking about is Clinton Cornwell, who was on the show about, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, you know, and Clinton and I have kind of formed a little bit of a relationship too. So, you know, we talk regularly about filmmaking and stuff like that, but he was on the show about a month ago. So yeah. And he kind of, you came to me through him. He was sort of somebody that recommended when I was sort of reaching out for other people to be on the podcast. So yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to explain who this person that we keep talking about is.
Clinton's awesome. Yeah. And check out his movie, 12 Months.
Yeah. Definitely.
Now available.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting.
As of last week.
Got released. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bad Bad Men played at Dance of the Films. And then Indie Rights, I believe that's one of the distributors. Like, I mean, we emailed so many.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's one that, like, some of them just kind of come across the films. Like, if they're scouting the festivals, like, sometimes a distributor will come and check out your screening. But I'm pretty sure Indie Rights is one that we reached out to. Anyway, we ended up signing with them, and then we signed with them again for Cold Feet. And that's gone pretty well.
I've heard a lot of good things about Indie Rights and kind of last several interviews. Seems like people are having good experiences with them.
Yeah.
They have a pretty, I think they're pretty transparent. They have a pretty fixed, you know, agreement in terms of percentages, things like that. And it just seems like, you know, I've heard good stories. So yeah.
They're good. Yeah. I mean, they're solid. Yeah. I think Clinton was talking about this some too. Like, they didn't have, like, there's certain distributors that we've steered away from because of marketing caps.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every now and then you'll come up with a marketing cap that is so, at least seemingly and most likely actually insurmountable, that you're like, well, what, you know, if we want to try to recoup anything from this,
what's the point?
Then what's the point? So that's something we looked at. So that's one of the big bonuses of Indie Rights, is they don't, you have to deal with any of that marketing cap business. But then again, sometimes it's tricky because there are every now and then, like, a distributor who it seems like it could be worth it to tackle the marketing cap. But if you don't, you know, sometimes too, it comes down to, like, the amount that you can spend on deliverables at that time too. Cause every now and then it's like, oh, you also need you to spend, like, a few thousand on deliverables. And if you're getting that email or that phone call at the same time, where you have still tens of thousands of dollars of debt from the making of the film, then that sometimes right there is like an automatic, like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I got to go another way because I can't add a few more $1,000 to the pile right now.
Yeah. And also, like, on the marketing cap thing, like, you know, presumably if the world worked the way that it was supposed to work, then that marketing cap would be a real honest marketing cap. And it represents the fact that they're actually going to spend money marketing your film. Whether that actually ends up being the case or not is a whole nother story, but that's the idea behind it. And so the marketing cap should, in theory, be appealing to a certain extent because it's making a statement that they're going to market your film, as opposed to other distributors that may or may not market your film. But if there's no marketing cap, then you can't really expect them to, you know. I think Indie Rights probably falls into that category. And again, I'm not saying anything bad about Indie Rights. I'm just saying that that's the deal that you get with them. They're not going to really market your film, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of taking a percentage and kind of, you know, they're putting their label on it. They're putting it in their catalog and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that certainly comes with some legitimacy, but you're not going to expect a big, huge promotional thing out of them either. And
right. Yeah, transparency is the key. Like you use the word used, like that's, and so I've got nothing, like Indie Rights is great, like as far as I'm concerned, all because they are like super transparent. You know what you're signing up for.
Yeah, exactly.
So
right.
There's no bullshit, which is refreshing. Yeah. But some of this marketing, I learned too from one offer that we had a while back. There was a marketing cap, but then also our sales rep on that one was like, just so you know, there's also a corridor. I'm like, what's a corridor?
Oh, yeah, explain
like,
that to me. I don't think I'm familiar with that term either.
I still really don't understand it. All I know is that, like, basically, the marketing cap face value was, like, $25,000, something like that. And then there was also a corridor that would open up magically or whatever. Like, as soon as, like, revenue started coming in, before we would see anything, there was also a corridor of other money that they would have to, like, make to cover some other costs. So basically, it's like the marketing cap said $25,000, but when you brought the corridor into play, it was more like $37,000.
Yeah.
So we're like, well, why don't you just say $37,000?
Right.
Like,
right.
Why do you have to phrase it this way? Just like be, you know, put in bold, like $37,000, and then maybe break it down from there, but don't try to trick us, or don't like, maybe not even try to trick us, but it just seemed a little, again, like our rep had to like explain this to us because we're like, wait, what? Because it says right here, it's like, well, but also there's a freaking corridor, which whatever. So I still don't understand why, but that was the deal. So we're like, oh, so $37,000. That's a lot more. So we passed on that deal.
Yeah.
I think the corridor.
I think that just like, it's indicative of like, you know, a problem that, I mean, maybe it's a legit arrangement, but I think there's definitely with things like that, with sort of extra mumbo jumbo thrown into contracts like that, there is definitely the danger that they're sort of exploiting your lack of knowledge and understanding in order to kind of take further advantage of that, whether they're really doing it like sneakily or it's just kind of built into the way that business is done in those kinds of, you know, situations. I don't know, but yeah, it's always, I think those kinds of things are always pitfalls for independent filmmakers, especially inexperienced ones who are inexperienced with looking at distribution deals and contracts and things like that. You know, a good reason to have a good sales agent or a good lawyer, a good entertainment lawyer or something attached to your project so that they can kind of bring home some of those truths towards you. But of course, those things cost money too. So it's always tough to figure out
exactly
how to go about doing these things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really tricky thing because there's also like, there's a real push-pull between, there are certain distributors out there who will make you feel like you as an indie filmmaker really need them.
Yeah.
But there's also the fact that like the distributors really need you as well.
That's a truth that I wish got talked about more is that these distributors would have nothing if it weren't for, you know, people like us who are busting our butts out there, spending our own money sometimes, making movies that we hope audiences will see. And like, you know, like they don't exist without us. And yet we kind of get treated like shit by them, you know?
Yeah, you can. So it's a really interesting kind of like, you know, where some people can really, and I'm sure we have too in some capacity in other arrangements, but like, it's really easy to fall prey to like, oh, well, this like, you know, this shiny company or whatever, like wants our movie and they're going to put it out there and like, oh, we need them. Like that feeling of like, we need them.
Right.
And so you might be more likely to like, especially earlier on, like, you know, to sign a certain deal. If you haven't been through distribution already, like a few times, you might be more likely like to sign a certain deal because you might be getting taken advantage of a little bit. Like you said, starry-eyed earlier, especially when you combine starry-eyed with desperation.
Yeah.
You know, that can be.
And inexperienced, like, you know, right.
Inexperienced for getting taken advantage of. So now it's kind of moving forward. I'm trying to remember more and more that like as each deal comes through, it's like, okay, what do we actually, like what is actually to our benefit? Like what's going to be the best thing for the movie? For us, like, what do we actually need here? Because at the end of the day, like, we can all, you know, distribute it ourselves at this point.
Right.
But I have found, though, too, that, like, certain companies are able to, whether they're doing a lot of, like, active marketing or not, there are certain companies that are able to, like, get your movie in front of more eyes than you might necessarily be able to do on your own. You also have to remember, too, like, when you self-distribute, like, it's you know, it's you and you and whoever else you have on board, but, like, there's no one else supporting you in like in any capacity.
Yep.
So it's even hard. So that's adds a lot more to the workload as well. So it depends on like where you're at with other projects. Like if you have that one project and you're pushing that through and you're able to focus entirely on that, then maybe again, whatever the circumstances of your life are, if they're conducive to self-distribution, that's always something that's good to explore. Like for us, it's kind of like, I still am open to it for future movies for sure. We basically did self-distribution with We Got Lucky, when we made We Got Lucky. And we had our sales rep was involved with that too. So he kind of self-distributed it with us.
Right.
But we decided not to go with any of these distribution offers. We felt like, all right, let's explore this option of getting the movie out there.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, our other movies got out there more than we got Lucky. In part because we had some kind of company input. You know what I mean? So there is like, again, you have to pay, it's case by case basis, like in terms of like the case, you know, of whatever your film is and what you're trying to do with it and how you're trying to get it out there. And of course, the case of, you know, whatever festivals you're trying to reach out to or distributors or sales reps or what have you. It's tricky because you have to weigh all that stuff out and see what makes sense. And it's ongoing too, because the landscape's always shifting. And also because, you know, your circumstance in life is always shifting and like the film, each film is different. So, just always doing the best you can.
Yeah, for sure. So just to kind of drill down a little bit on talking about film festivals, because I know when you first brought up film festivals, you said, you know, you have some opinions on them. So I don't want to let that go. So tell us a little bit more about your opinions of film festivals and your experiences with them, that kind of thing.
So overall, like, and I'm not going to name any festivals, but overall, as far as like in this part of the conversation, at least, like overall, we've had great experiences with festivals. It's just that it comes to a certain point, especially after you've done like a few features, at least, like speaking for myself, like now when I think about like moving forward with these other projects, I'm less gung-ho about festivals and pursuing festivals. I'm more interested in getting the movie out there. Now, granted, festivals have always been a part of the whole getting the movie out there thing. You know, that's part of the point. But I'm more interested in kind of like cutting out that middleman, so to speak, and just pursuing distribution a little more earlier on in the process.
Yeah.
And maybe
because that's the thing is that festivals. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say that like festivals are, they're a good way to maybe get films out there for a certain market, but they cost money. They don't make you any money. They cost money.
Yes.
And they kind of delay the release of your film for like a year, you know, while you're kind of waiting to see how it does. And so, you know, it's definitely not the path for a lot of filmmakers, I think, to take if they just want to get their films out there and get seen and start, you know, maybe making some money. So that's all I was going to interject, but go ahead with your thoughts.
No, I agree. Like, I feel like, again, like the festival, like I, you know, I regret nothing. Like I'm pleased with like a lot of our festival experiences, I can speak. But moving forward, it's kind of like, I'm not trying to spend all that money on submission fees and I'm not trying to wait that much longer because it's hard enough. Like, you know, the post-production process, especially when you have limited resources, is extended enough as is, you know, and I don't want to add necessarily that extra year of like, let's wait and see with these festivals before release the movie. So now I'm more interested in like targeting like a very minimal amount of festivals and like submitting to those, seeing what happens, but not, you know, not casting the net wide. Like, you know, in the past, like sometimes we would submit to like 30, 40 festivals or whatever. And now it's like, oh, maybe we'll target like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I'm more interested in like getting, and like if they can help, like if there's certain festivals that we feel like can help like get the movie in front of certain distributors who we might not be able to get the movie in front of. But again, that's part of too. It's like, as I move forward, when I talk about, you know, getting that script sold and an option, like that to me, like I would love for that to like open up some opportunities and get these other projects in front of a different set of eyeballs than we might be able to otherwise. You know what I mean? So having everything kind of like, contributing to and reinforcing everything else.
Right.
As opposed to just trying to like, oh, but this next one, like let's do festivals, like something we've done in the past, like let's do the festivals. Do that for about a year, and then hopefully we'll stir up interest from distributors for the festivals. And if not, then we'll just like, you know, email more distributors, like so on and so forth.
I'm
much more interested in getting the movie out there now sooner. And but again, like it depends on where you're at, and this is where I am right now.
And
I've done a few festivals and like, a few features and a few festivals for each, so it's kind of like for a lot of them.
No, that's great. And you know, I mean, part of what this podcast is all about is just like kind of collecting all of those different stories. And we talked about this earlier, right? You know, everybody's journey is different. Everybody's approach is different. Everybody's movie is different. And so there's no one right answer. There's no one right story that everybody should emulate, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's just important for us as indie filmmakers to just hear each other's stories and kind of take bits and pieces from everything that we hear and everybody.
100%,
And, you know, glean that and turn that into your own course of action, which is also going to be completely unique and its own story, you know.
Totally. No, for festivals real fast, too, is that, like, you know, I met Clinton at a festival. And so we're having, so we're having this conversation as well because of, like, you know, I love the relationships that I've forged through festivals.
Yeah, definitely.
And that sense of community and expanding that community and the support has probably been, like, my favorite thing about the festivals. And we have gotten some distribution off of the festivals, but all the, you know, the relationships and the support in the community are the most beneficial part of festivals.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Just kind of thinking back to my documentary feature that I made back in the 2000s, it was, you know, I took it to a lot of festivals and, you know, some of those were clunkers for sure. None of them were big, you know, quote, big festivals, you know, prestige had high, you know, super high prestige value, but a lot of them were sort of mid tier and they, you know, they were just, for me, I spent a lot of money in festival application fees. I'll admit that. But for me, the experience of just kind of going to the film festivals and having like a loyal kind of audience that was sort of primed for the kind of movie that I made rather than just sort of the whole world and trying to find the people in the whole world. And of course, this was before streaming and all those kinds of things. So it was a lot harder to just sort of get a film out in front of eyeballs, even potentially. And so film festivals were just, they were a great experience just for that alone, just going to these different cities and showing, you know, and it costs a lot of money, you know, in a lot of cases, my travel costs weren't paid for, those kinds of things. But yeah, I view a lot of those experiences really fondly.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you just have to have, you have to be going to festivals for the right reason. And I think sometimes there's illusions about what you might actually accomplish at a festival versus what you might not accomplish that are good to keep in mind.
It goes back to like what we were talking about earlier too with distributors as well. It's like festivals need us just as much as we quote unquote need festivals, probably like more so really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, it's kind of like, okay, what's going to be, you're looking for a mutually beneficial situation for obviously for yourself and the film and the festival. So, you know, just trying to like, if you're going to pursue the festival path, which, you know, it's, there's a lot of value to that. It's just doing your due diligence and research and finding out which ones will be most beneficial for your particular project as much as possible. And then seeing like what's worth it to you. Like right now, like at the point I'm at my life too, like I'm not trying to like go travel around to like various festivals and whatnot. It would have to be like a really good reason, like for a festival that I think could really like, you know, help in some capacity, you know, for whatever, you know, but yeah, to help is probably the best word. And, you know, otherwise, yeah, I'm not trying to go to festivals or at least traveling outside of my area to festivals right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's also hard. Like if you're talking about movies at a budget range of like $10,000 or $15,000, if you apply to a bunch of festivals, your festival application budget could be, you know, a significant percentage of that, you know, or.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you could easily spend $10,000 in festival application fees if you wanted to, you know. And so it's really hard to justify that expense with such a, you know, small budget movie, I think.
Especially when you toss in like, you know, the cost of like a DCP and any kind of marketing materials.
Oh, God,
and then if you are going to travel, like you said, like all these things add up so quickly. So yeah, your festival budget could almost equal the cost of a, anyway. Yeah, like you just said.
Yeah. Totally. So yeah, any other, you know, we've been talking for about an hour here, you know, any other words of wisdom or, you know, stories you want to share, things that, you know, you think listeners might benefit from, just kind of about your distribution experiences in general?
I think I've pretty much touched on everything that I wanted to talk about through the course of this conversation. But yeah, like it's like, you know, just know, I mean, at the end of the day, like I hope everyone out there is making the movies because they really, really want to, because they really feel this need to, and that the, you know, the real reward, so to speak, or the real joy of it is just from the doing of the thing, from the making of the movie. And so anything outside of that, like again, like, you know, somewhat earlier, like, yes, we do want to like recoup, make more of a profit from the films, but that's again, goes back to like sustainability, because we want to keep making more films.
Right.
I want to have more time to make more movies too. And so, you know, simple math, that's like the more money that comes in from the movies, the more, you know, I'm able to support my family through making the movies, and then the more time I'll have as well.
Yep.
But as far like, you know, you got to make the movies too, because you've got to make the movies, and anything that comes after that is kind of like I was saying earlier, kind of like a really nice bonus, or, you know, something helpful along that path of being able to continue to make movies. But yeah, man. And again, like, you know, just keeping in mind too, like your own value and your worth and the worth of your film and what you and your team have done together, and try and don't let yourself, you know, fall prey as much as possible to those out there who will try to like lord whatever power that they want to like at least pretend they have, try to like lord that over you and make you feel like you are subservient to them, that like, you need them. It's like, know your worth, know the worth of yourself and the work that you've done. Yeah, just try to enjoy the process as much as possible, because it can be super, all of it can be super stressful. Like, obviously, there's the making of the film, but then it's like everything we're talking about here with the distribution and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's so stressful and so aggravating. But again, like, if you've got a movie that you're proud of, and you made it for all, you know, the way that we, you know, that I see it, like all the right reasons, then yeah, he's got to try to enjoy that ride as much as possible. Yeah. And try to stay positive, try to stay optimistic. And
agree. Yeah. Totally. You kind of have to, if you're not positive under, you know, these kinds of circumstances, it's going to be really rough for you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because it's so hard to get films out there and get seen by enough people to make the money back that you have to spend on them, because making movies is so expensive, you know? So, yeah. Which sounds like a completely negative comment to, you know, the idea of being positive.
No.
I don't really mean it that way.
One other thing I'll say, one last thing too.
Yeah, please.
Like, I've realized, like, time and time again, if you're making a movie that you have conviction about and you have love for the film and like you just really need to make it, get it out there, like there will be people out there who connect with that movie and it will resonate with them and they will love it as well. So if you have that, like if the movie really means that much to you, it will also mean that much. It's about then trying to get it out to all those people as much as possible, because you will find people who will really connect with the film. And that's always really exciting and gratifying.
Yeah.
So just know that, like, if you believe in it, it sounds trite, but it's so true though. If you have conviction about it, it will connect with people and they will love it. Like, there will be people who love it. So it's worth all the slings and arrows, and you'll catch some negativity as well, of course, but like, that's okay. It'll find its audience. You just got to give it a chance to like get out there to find its audience. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Really appreciate those words. I think those are very valuable words to hear. So thank you for sharing that. Where can people follow you or get in touch with you? Anything like that? Anything you want to plug, promote? You know, now's your chance.
Yeah. No, Facebook, Twitter at Alan C. Gardner, AllenCGardner. And then on Instagram at Alan C. Gardner Movies. You go to my linktree.com/AllenCGardner. That's probably the best place to go.
Okay.
Because it has links to all my films there. So yeah. Great.
Okay. All right. Put all that in the show notes. Love hearing about your experiences. Thanks for sharing everything, and good luck to you in the future. You know, sounds like you've got with your new family and, you know, kind of somewhat different priorities, you've got a great plan to kind of shift a little bit in terms of how you do things and go forward. And I wish you all the success in the world kind of pursuing that new path. Yeah. So.
Well, thanks. But thanks again for having me. This has been a lot of fun, dude. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Great talking to you. All right, that's all for today. Thanks everybody for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate and or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. That is the best way that you can help me grow the show and reach a wider audience of independent filmmakers and others who just want to try to understand this crazy, crazy world of independent film distribution. As always, feel free to contact me directly with any feedback or suggestions for the show. You can find me on Twitter, or should I say X, or Instagram at DarkRoseColin, or you can email me at Colin@DarkRosePictures.com. That's Colin with one L, C-O-L-I-N, @DarkRosePictures.com. And by the way, DarkRosePictures.com is my website for my feature and other projects. Its purpose is not just to promote my films, but to tell the story with honesty and transparency of my own personal filmmaking journey. So if you want to follow the process of an independent filmmaker from development to distribution, this is a great way to do that. So check it out, DarkRosePictures.com. Anyway, a big, big thanks to Alan C. Gardner for taking the time to talk with me about his filmmaking and distribution experiences. I really appreciate his enthusiasm and honesty. Another big thanks to Jeff Rymoot for another fantastic editing job. I've got more great guests lined up in the coming weeks talking all things indie distribution, so please stay tuned, keep getting those movies out there into the world, and thank you so much for listening. See you next week.